After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague, Peter Flaherty. We have reached conference tournament week. It is an exciting time. It's a hectic time. This is going to be a shorter pod. If you enjoy our meandering 90-minute pods where we cover who knows what across six or seven conferences, this is not going to be that. There's too much going on this time of year. We're going to keep this one tight, Peter. But I will say, before we get into the action, that this is one of my very favorite weeks of the year because everything matters so much, and there's so much of it. Like next weekend and the following weekend, you know, the baseball, like there's a lot of baseball once the NCAA tournament starts, but there's not as much. And it's really, really high stakes, but this is also really high stakes. There's so many teams playing for their seasons, and there's also still just a ton of baseball. Very few teams have already had their seasons ended. Some of them have, certainly, but there's still just a lot of baseball this week, and it's like almost everyone is playing with as much urgency as they can muster.
Yeah, it's like, for me, on the college baseball calendar, it's conference tournament week, opening weekend, that first week of regionals, and then Omaha's my favorite weeks of the year. And this, it's similar to you, this conference tournament week might take the cake. Like, no matter what time of day you're at, no matter what day of the week it is, you're going to have a number of games going on at once, and the vast majority of them are going to mean a whole lot, whether it's a smaller conference deciding an automatic bid, the domino effect of an upset in one of these kind of high major conferences that knocks a bubble power five. Like, every single game matters so much, which I just like you, it makes this week so much fun. So I'm really enjoying all the action.
Well, as we record this, it's a little after noon in Central Time. So I guess it's almost 2 o'clock. It's a little after 2 o'clock Eastern on Wednesday. And it's important to timestamp this because things do move quickly this week with teams, you know, getting eliminated from their tournaments. And what does that mean for their RPIs and bubble and all the rest of that? So what we're talking about is, as things stand midday on Wednesday, I would encourage everyone to check out baseballamerica.com throughout the week. I'm updating the projected field of 64 daily. I'm updating Bubble Watch at least daily. Oftentimes while I'm sitting in the press box in Hoover, I just kind of go in and do a quick update in the middle of the afternoon. But regardless, like that, those two things are updating minimally overnight. And again, I try and keep pretty up to date on all that stuff. So if you're wondering where things stand, we've got you covered over at baseballamerica.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. I'm mostly tweeting about what I'm seeing at the SEC. I've been bad on Twitter for like the last day, and that'll probably continue because I have so many different things going on. But Peter is doing great, as always. You can follow him at Peter G. Flaherty. And there's a lot to follow around the country. Peter, I guess what we're going to start with, though, is the SEC, partially because I'm here, partially because yesterday, Tuesday, was so impactful because five SEC teams finished last weekend tied at 13-17 in the standings. That was a tie for seventh. So the SEC has to break the tie for purposes of seeding their tournament. So they ran from 7-11 in the SEC tournament seedings. And I have had a real difficult time sorting through these five teams over the last few days in terms of figuring out where they fit into the NCAA tournament picture. Things are starting to get some clarity after they all played on Tuesday in its single elimination on opening day in the SEC. So Alabama played South Carolina and Vanderbilt. Who did they play?
Florida. They doubled
Vanderbilt
up
played Florida. Florida. Yes. So those were four of the teams. And then Georgia was not one of those teams. They played LSU. So LSU, Vanderbilt, Florida, South Carolina, and Alabama. Because Bama and South Carolina and Vanderbilt and Florida played each other, two of them had to be eliminated. So going home right away was Alabama and Florida. I still feel great about Alabama. Maybe not great. I still feel good about Alabama. They have a top 20 RPI. The metrics are very strong in a variety of ways for the Crimson Tide. Florida's a little trickier. Florida, we talked about last week, needing to win the Georgia series or reach the SEC tournament semifinals to have a winning record and therefore even be eligible for the NCAA tournament. They did that in very dramatic fashion in Athens. They lost their first game. They needed a comeback in game two. They win in extra innings. Then they win the finale kind of going away. It was a slugfest that they won. So, like, they're feeling good. They add in another really big time series win. Then they come here and they get bounced by Vanderbilt. It wasn't a great showing by Florida. They lose 6-3. It wasn't even that close. Those three runs came in the ninth. But so now they're a very confusing, like 29-28, hanging into the top 30 in RPI. We'll see if they can hold on to that. They're number one in strength of schedule. But Peter, this is where really like the Florida resume stands out to me. They have series wins against Texas A&M, Georgia, Mississippi State, and LSU, not to mention Miami. And, you know, A&M and Georgia are hosting. Mississippi State is trying to play their way into a host race. And it's just like you look at those top end wins and you look at their strength of schedule and it's like, I mean, why not? Why are they not in the tournament? But I also do understand the flip side of like they're only one game above 500. They finished 13-17 in the SEC and their RPI is at a range where historically it's borderline about whether that would equal a tournament bid. So where do you stand on the Gators?
It's a great question and one I've struggled with. I think, one, they need to hope for as close to a chalky conference tournament week as you can have outside of the Power Five conferences. Like in the American, they got to have ECU win it. In the Sun Belt, they can't have one of those teams steal a bid and so on. I think for me that the series win over Georgia, that put them on the right side of my bubble, at least. I think that is going to be the cherry on top and what ultimately lands them in the field. You mentioned their marquee series wins. They have a handful. They got to the above 500 record threshold, which that's really not saying much. But when you look at the under the hood a little bit at the Gators, you said it, number one strength of schedule, they're top 30 in RPI. They have over a dozen quad one wins. I just think when all is said and done, they're going to sneak their way into the field.
Yeah, that is my feeling as well. And it'll be somewhat controversial if the SEC gets 11 bids in, because that would be a record. And it's a lot. It's a lot for a league. Like, there's no doubt about it. But also, the SEC is clearly the best league in college baseball. That's not a new thing. Nobody's going to be surprised by it being the SEC that would get 11 teams in. The SEC softball, different sport, sure, but literally all 13 SEC teams got into the softball tournament. So, like, you can say, like, well, we don't want that to become what happens in baseball, and that's fine. But I just guess I would say, like, if they're clearly the best teams, and I spend all this time like evaluating these bubble teams, and I look at Florida, and I look at their metrics, I look at their wins, especially their what they did on the field in terms of who they beat. You compare them to, you know, pick whatever team you want to talk about on the bubble. I'm not trying to disrespect any of these teams, but compare them to Troy, to Indiana, to Kansas State, to Louisville. Like, what Florida has is different. It's just straight up different. And maybe the bubble will shrink enough that, like, we're not even talking about those teams, and maybe the comparisons will get tighter. But what they did is, the high-end series wins are really what's doing it for me, and the strength of schedule is a very real thing that the committee you know, definitely values. I don't know. It's a nervier week in Gainesville than they would like, no doubt. I feel like they're in an okay spot as we sit here on Wednesday. Things change, though. That is the thing here. People want certainty. There is no certainty until Monday when the selections are released. On the flip side of that, South Carolina beating Alabama, snapping a 6-game losing streak. I thought they would be okay even if they lost that game. Again, really strong RPI, strong series wins, strong metrics across the board, really. On the other hand, they would have lost 7 games in a row, all SEC games, and fallen to 13-18 against SEC competition. Add in 2 losses to Clemson, and it's like, well, this is suddenly looking a little more suspect. But they took care of business and beat Alabama. Vanderbilt had some metrics issues potentially, but they took care of business, beat Florida, and they now own a 3-1 record against Florida. So it's going to be hard to put in Florida and not put in Vanderbilt, I feel like. And LSU, after their win against Georgia, they went into the week with the worst RPI of the quintet. The Georgia win helped resolve that. But then they came back this morning, beat Kentucky. Their RPI is looking great. Like, LSU is looking perfectly fine. And Peter, they let the Tigers get hot. Like, this team, I'm not saying this is like the team that we ranked number 2 in the preseason, but it's a lot closer to that team than anything we've seen since the Astros Foundation Classic in week 3 when they swept through that and beat Texas and looked quite good doing it.
Yeah, I mean, one, they're now a lock for the tournament without a doubt, and it kind of felt like as the season was going on, we were just waiting for the time for them to get hot, and it never really happened, I guess, in the regular season. But now, I mean, they're playing their best baseball at the perfect time. They outscored Georgia and Kentucky by a combined margin of 20-1 in the last 48 hours, and the entire lineup is producing. Like, Michael Braswell, I know that the addition of him was viewed rather differently. Like, it was a polarizing one, and he has really answered the bell when it's mattered most for LSU, so I give him a ton of credit. Tommy White has been like the unconscious version of Tommy White in the last couple of days, and really the last few weeks. He's been excellent for him. The lineup as a whole is producing. Jared Jones is continuing to hit. Josh Pearson, Stephen Milam. It's kind of all starting to come together and come into focus for LSU, and you've got the shades of the 2023 team a little bit with Gavin Guidry looking really good today against Kentucky. Granted, the stakes were extremely low. He was in when it was like 11-0 and the game was out of reach, but 2 shutout innings looked really good doing it. Griffin Herring continues to be maybe one of the, like, underratedly one of the best pitchers in the SEC, at least from a statistical standpoint. And the point I want to continue to harp on, and I know I've brought it up a bunch, is now that LSU is safely in, one, they might be the last team I think anyone would want to see in the regional. And 2, when you talk about a team and whether or not they're built for like a little bit of a run, I think LSU is built for it because I have more faith in their lineup now than I did maybe a few weeks ago. The 1-2 punch on the mound of Gage Jump and Luke Holman is a really good one. And you add in some bullpen depth pieces. I don't know. They've got it all going on. They're clearly really feeling it. And they are a team that I don't think you want to play right now for a number of reasons. So heck of a 36 hours for Coach Johnson's club.
Here's a hot take. I'm still baking this one a little bit, but I'm like 90% sure that this is what I'm going to do next week when everybody starts asking me who I'm picking to win the national championship. You ready for this?
Oh, I like it already.
LSU. I'm back in. And, you know, you're talking about like shades of 23, you know, seeing Guidry pitch really well and, you know, Travinsky and White and all of that's true. I'm thinking about this and like, this is a super self-centered way to address this, but here we go. It's my podcast. It's not really, it's our podcast. Anyway, in 2019, I went into the season, I picked Florida State to win the national championship. We ranked them number 6 in the preseason. That was a bit aggressive, as I recall, like if you looked at other polls, but I believed in the team and it was Mike Martin's final year. You know, I liked the narrative and I liked the team. You might recall Florida State really struggled at the outset, especially of the ACC season. And there was a time when it looked like things were not going to go well for 11's final year. Well, they got it going in the second half. They make the tournament. They were a 3 seed in Athens. And I, absent, like, that year I just didn't really, I can't really put myself back in that mindset. But as I recall, I just didn't really feel any of the teams. And I was like, you know what? I'm just back in. I'm back in on Florida State. I'm riding this to the finish. I'm riding, like, the storyline. They were hot. And, you know, like, again, I felt good about the team, the talent level. And, you know, Jay Johnson is not retiring. So there's no like narrative superpower, but he's a really good coach. He's pushing all the right buttons. You know, it's really easy for an SEC season to spiral out of control. It happens all the time in this league. LSU was 3-12 at one point. Like, they could have completely fallen apart. And yes, the schedule eased up in the second half. That is fact. But they didn't fall apart. And I mean, I think massive credit to the team leaders, you know, both the players and the coaches for keeping them together and making this possible. Because right now, Jump and Holman look like one of the better 1-2 punches in the country. Griffin Herring is one of the better relievers in the country. You have a lineup with, you know, some real power in the middle with Jones, Tanks, Travinsky, like Braswell is going. Like, I feel like I am certainly being a prisoner of the moment, and I don't really care. Like, I'm in. What I wanted to ask, Peter, is Luke Holman just threw 6 hitless innings at the SEC tournament. There are a lot of scouts here every year. He was kind of borderline first rounder. How much does that help him? And, like, how much do you think the conference tournament, like, it used to be like this was, like, one of the very last looks. You now, with the draft being later, do the conference tournaments still hold, like, that same kind of sway in a draft room?
That's a great question. I don't know if it holds as much sway as going out and doing it in Omaha, a la Cade Horton in 2022, but it's certainly loud, and he did it against Kentucky as well. And granted, we always talk about how there's no bad team in the SEC, there's no easy weekend, blah, 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 but, like, he did it against Kentucky. He didn't do it against, you know, a bottom half of the SEC team in a Kentucky lineup that's been swinging it really well at that, and he made mincemeat of him. He's kind of been floating around all year in that potentially late first, comp round, early second. But if he goes out and is a key piece as to what, like, if LSU is to, if they make another run to Omaha and win a College World Series, like, it's going to be hard to do it without a handful of key starts from Luke Holman. But if the Tigers go out and make this deep run, and he's a huge reason as to why, that's certainly going to boost his stock by a pretty decent margin. I don't want to put an actual number on it, but if the Tigers go to the College World Series or even make a super regional, and he makes a couple of good starts between the regional and super regional, I think he'd certainly be closer to a late first round type than he would be an early second or a comp round.
It's really interesting to watch, you know, these guys, how they handle the big stage of a conference tournament, of pitching with your season on the line. And that goes for, like, yeah, we talk about how big the stage is in Hoover. The crowds are huge. But, like, even if we're talking about, you know, Nick Brink, my favorite mid-major prospect, you know, whenever he takes the mound in the WCC tournament, I'm sure the crowd is not going to be what it was this morning for LSU. But, like, you know, Portland's season is on the line with him out there. And, like, how do you handle that pressure? Like, I'm sure that everyone in the industry is keeping a careful watch on, you know, that kind of mental aspect of it, because, you know, the baseball's really hard just at a baseline. And then you add in the pressure of playing and performing when the season's on the line. And, you know, some guys, like, really rise to that occasion. And it's always a lot of fun to see, like, who really steps up this week and in regionals and is able to be the hero for their team.
Yeah, no doubt. It says a lot about the mental makeup of a pitcher, kind of their fortitude, so to speak, and how they pitch and how they handle themselves when the lights are at their brightest. So I'm with you. It's a lot of fun to watch.
All right, let's get a quick break in here. And then we're going to come back and hit on some of these other conferences. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about Indeed is how much easier it has made the hiring process. Everything I need is all in one place. The ways to contact potential employees, job candidates, all in one place. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Just go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Peter, let's slide over to the ACC. They had three games on Tuesday in pool play, as their tournament is, and all three of them involved the three bubbly teams from the ACC, Louisville, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech, and those teams all lost. And to a varying degree, like, that was a really impactful. Virginia Tech is now, I and pretty much everybody believe, done. Can you imagine, can you, like, remember on April 1st when Virginia Tech was 21-5, and now we're talking about them like they lost their final six ACC series and lost on Tuesday, and we'll see if they can get a win out of the ACC tournament. But it's just, obviously some of it's schedule related. We knew at the time that there was a chance that they had just played some really bad ACC teams early on, but it's the difference in the way Virginia Tech started the year and how it's finishing it is stark. Louisville, right in the bubble, right now, bad RPI. They did win 16 ACC games in the regular season. It's a hard one for me to parse, but not as hard as Georgia Tech, which won a game in Tallahassee last weekend to finish at 15-15 in ACC play. They go out, they lose again to Florida State on Tuesday. Their RPI remains in the top 50. Their RPI is really the worst part of their resume. Everything else is pretty solid. Their non-conference strength of schedule is bad. I get some vibes of Notre Dame last year. They got left out. Of course, that was when the bubble really tightened. I just genuinely don't know what to do with Georgia Tech. They are like the hardest team for me to evaluate right now. I'd feel a whole lot better if they won their second game. But it was a tough day for ACC bubble teams, none of them getting the win that they needed.
Yeah, it was kind of the anti-SEC, where yesterday and today even the tournament picture became a lot more clear. Man, with Georgia Tech going 0-2, like you said, they are right there. You could say they're bubble out, bubble in. There's an argument for both, and I think just like Florida, they're going to need to hope for little to no stolen bids, because, you know, as it's inevitable that a couple bids will get stolen and there will be a couple of deep runs in these smaller conferences. So if that happens, that will probably push Georgia Tech out. And then with Louisville, the RPI is in a more precarious position right now at, I think, 59 at the time of this recording. And for them to, like, it felt like yesterday they really, really needed to win. And I know that they could still go out on Friday and take down Clemson, which would probably, I mean, that'd be a huge boost to the resume. But I was looking at it this week as, okay, they'll go out and probably take one from Miami on Tuesday and then go down to Clemson, and then whatever happens, happens. But for them to go out and lose that first game and now be faced with kind of a must-win scenario against Clemson and a really, really good Clemson team at that, that's not a spot you want to be in. So I think when push comes to shove, both are out for me right now. Same with Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech has less of a debate. I don't really know if there is a like, they obviously have to win against NC State and they need help elsewhere, but I still don't really think there's much of a debate. So I'd say all three right now are on the wrong side of the bubble.
The really hard thing for Louisville is that by losing to Miami, they cannot advance. The way that the pool play works, ties go to the higher seeded team. And so because Miami's now 1-0, if they beat Clemson, they're 2-0 and they've already advanced by the time Clemson plays Louisville. If Clemson beats Miami, they've already advanced, because then everybody would finish 1-1 at worst, and Clemson advances by virtue of being the number two overall seed. And so I guess the good thing for Louisville is that Clemson will have nothing to play for. They truly will have nothing to play for in that game on Friday, because either, you know, they know they're advancing already and they care more about like trying to win the tournament, or they know that they're done and, you know, they're pretty secure in a top eight seed. The problem though is Louisville, that's the last chance Louisville has. They can throw everything they have at it, but they don't get another chance to build their, to boost their RPI. And so they're not going to finish in the top 50. Like, I just don't even think that there's a possible scenario where they have a top 50 RPI. And I don't know. It's the last time an ACC team with a winning ACC record got left out was 2018 Miami. And their RPI was north of 60, but like it was like 62. So I don't think there's a big difference between 59 and 62 or 55 and 60. I don't know. Like, it's not great for Louisville. And their non-conference schedule is terrible. They played a terrible non-conference schedule. Their overall schedule strength is okay, but their non-conference, they did nothing basically. And it's just not going to, there's not a whole lot of there to like really fall back on. They're going to have to rely on the fact that they had this nice ACC record. Georgia Tech, I just now looked at the score against Virginia, and wow, was that bad. That happened this morning. They got run ruled. Not the way you want to end it. You know, 9 quad one wins is a lot. And somewhat similar to Florida, like when I talk about some of these other teams, it's like Charleston is 2-1 in quad one. You know, like what are we like, how do we even evaluate this stuff? But that's what RPI is for. Like, that's why the metrics exist. And Georgia Tech's 50, KPI rates them way better. That's maybe their saving grace. I don't know. I do kind of think that one of these ACC teams finds their way in. But if the bubble tightens, that might not happen. So it'll be interesting. The other interesting thing in the ACC tournament is there is, by Georgia losing on Tuesday, that really opens the door for an ACC team to go grab another top eight seed, whether that's Florida State, NC State, or Virginia. All of them have a case. And that is what I'm watching the most in the ACC the rest of the way now, because I think that tournament's pretty compelling just from a pure talent standpoint. And if one of those teams goes out and wins the tournament or even, you know, reaches the final, I think that, you know, like ordering those three teams is a really difficult task. And I think how they perform the rest of this week in Charlotte will help inform how they get stacked up.
Yeah, big time. I guess one more quick point, and you brought up an interesting one. Let's say one of those three doesn't have to make the tournament. There's a very realistic scenario where none make the tournament. But if one makes it, I'm with you that Georgia Tech is the team to get that bid. And also with Louisville, in looking up and down its schedule, to your point, there isn't a whole lot to fall back. Like, all the more reason why Friday's game against Clemson is incredibly important, because they have a really nice home sweep over NC State. And that's really it. Like, they have another home sweep over Notre Dame, but that really doesn't mean a whole lot. So, like, they need something to kind of, as a last ditch feather in their cap for the resume, and it's Friday. So, yeah, it's very important. And then as far as the top eight national seed race goes, that is also a very fun underlying storyline of the ACC tournament. I think NC State might be positioned best, but FSU is obviously right in the hunt. Virginia, if they go on a run, which they certainly have the capability to do so, they're in the hunt. But in the similar of picking one of three teams to do something trend, I guess I'd probably say NC State. I don't know how confident I feel in that, but I would lean Wolfpack to sneak into that top eight national seed, to get that last top eight national seed.
Briefly, NC State is only in that position because they swept Wake Forest last weekend in Raleigh. We're obviously, because we're trying to move quickly, we're not really talking about what happened last weekend much, but Peter, like, wow, that was loud. And, you know, NC State, you know, Chase Burns was as good as he could have been. NC State kind of cobbled a plan together to, you know, a pitching plan of their own. You know, they don't have a Chase Burns, but like they were able to match up on that night and eke out with a 2-1 win when all of a sudden Zach Johnston and then Cole Rowland couldn't find the strike zone and walk in the winning run.
Yeah, that was ultra, ultra impressive. That had me kind of drinking the Kool-Aid on them a little bit. It's hard to not after a weekend like that. And like you, I was most impressed with that Friday win over Chase Burns. Like they withstood a haymaker punch. He went seven innings, didn't allow an earned run, only allowed five hits, punched out 13, didn't walk anyone. And then, like you said, they matched him with a trio of arms that went out and threw the ball really well. Dom Fritton, who for NC State to make a run, they need guys like Dominic Fritton to go out and give them strong starts consistently. And he did that on Friday, only allowed one earned across 4 2/3. And then Andrew Schaffner and Jacob Duden combined to throw 4 1/3 shutout hitless innings in relief. Duden has been, other than a couple of outings, has been excellent for NC State in relief this year. Schaffner, that was a key appearance for him. But the two X factors for NC State out of the bullpen, keep an eye on Derek Smith, the back of the baseball card. He doesn't have a minuscule ERA like some of the other relievers you see in the country, but he has been absolute nails for them in conference play. 32 Ks to 21 walks. He's really found it and flipped the switch as the calendar changed to like April, I think it was. And then also freshman Cooper Consiglio, he has also really stepped up with a handful of high quality appearances. So again, that's another team that when the stakes are really high as they are right now, they are looking like and they're looking like they're playing their best baseball. So they have an interesting couple of days ahead with tricky matchups against Virginia Tech and Duke. I'm particularly intrigued by tonight when you're listening to this, tonight's game against Duke. But they've got it all going on. Not to mention they're really swinging it well as well.
Let's go to Arlington, where the Big 12 is playing their tournament. Kind of a mixed bag for bubble teams in Arlington. On day one, UCF got a win that probably makes it feel a little bit better. K-State got a loss that really made it sweat, then it bounced back and got a win to stay alive and probably feeling a little bit better. TCU, you know, there are a number of teams there. Cincinnati, Kansas as well, really on the periphery for KU, but all those teams a little bit bubbly in a variety of ways. You know, no one clear narrative in the way that we saw in the ACC or the SEC in terms of wins and losses on the first day. But that tournament, also because it's just a truer, it's not quite a straight up double elimination normal tournament, but it's closer to that, so it's a little easier to follow in terms of the goings on and in terms of like who is getting what out of that. But some intriguing things there, like I do feel like UCF, I'd been kind of down on them for a while in terms of do I really like the resume, like feeling way better about it right now. There's a lot of nervousness about K-State, the way that they finished the season. Yeah, so a lot of intrigue in Arlington, not a lot of clear answers to this point, but a lot of intrigue in Arlington.
Yeah, at least today, K-State picked up a crucial 8-4 win over West Virginia. Like it was imperative that they went out and did that after a tough loss yesterday to Kansas. I think that they can feel a little better about where they're at. I think another win would probably solidify their at-large bid.
Because that's the problem. They're up to 42 right now in the live, but like they have to lose again. And like potentially, depending on the loss that they take, unless it's to Oklahoma or Oklahoma State, they might be right back where they were after they lost on Tuesday. So it's tricky,
right?
The double elimination stuff.
Exactly. Like a loss isn't going to completely undo what was a nice win today, but it's going to be like a three steps forward, like one and a half steps back. That's the weirdest analogy maybe of all time, but it's going to undo some of what it did today. But if they can go out and notch a really good looking win over, like you said, one of the top tier teams in the conference, that'll cement themselves as a tournament team, I think. And then with TCU yesterday going out and beating also West Virginia, I feel like that put the Horned Frogs in for me. I don't know where you stand on them, but I think that they, when all is said and done, they'll find themselves in the field of 64. And then UCF got a critical win over Cincinnati, more of an important win for UCF, or more of a bad loss for Cincinnati than it was, I think, an important win for UCF. The Bearcats really needed that, and they really, really need this evening's game against Texas, I think, to keep its fading at-large hopes alive. If they go out and lose tonight, they're done. So it's a must-win for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Cincinnati down to 60 right now. The resume is lacking straight up. They went 17-13 in the Big 12. I didn't break down who they missed in conference play. Like, shouts to Jordan Bishel in his first year for having such a good year in the Big 12, especially in Cincinnati's first year in the Big 12. But all you have to do is think back to last year. USC went 17-13 in the Pac-12 and got passed over by Arizona, which had a way worse conference record, but had the RPI in the Big 12. K-State went, whatever it was, 15-13 when, if you count in their Big 12 tournament wins, I believe, in Big 12 play. They get passed over by Oklahoma, which has a worse record, but a better RPI. So there's plenty of examples of the committee very recently just saying, like, I don't know about these standings. Let's pick this other team. And, you know, the thing about the examples last year in the Pac and the Big 12 is that it was a pure round robin. You didn't miss anybody at that point. So like now, even with an imbalanced schedule, it's even worse. They're more likely to just kind of throw out the standings and pick the team that either the regional advisory committee is telling them is better or the metrics are telling them is better. So for me, Cincinnati, absolutely must win tonight, must win the next game, maybe even must win the game after that. Like, they're just not in a great spot right now, which is unfortunate. But, you know, I think you can feel good. Like, nobody at Cincinnati is going to feel good right in this moment. But when they look back at this season, I think they can look back and feel like, okay, that was a really good first step into Big 12 competition. First step under Jordan Bishel. We have something to build on here. But it is, like you said, the hopes are fading fast for the Bearcats. About TCU, like, yeah, the metrics seem to indicate it. I think they're probably fine. I've kind of thought they were probably fine all week. They finished 14-16 in Big 12 play. Unfortunately, there's some warts to the resume. There's some positives to the resume. There's a reason why they'll probably be a three seed, but I think they're in okay shape. It's a mess of a conference. It's been a mess of a conference all year. It seems like it's going to be an entertaining tournament, though. That Kansas State game on Tuesday was decided, you know, very, it was a tight game throughout. Texas Tech with a, you know, late winner against Texas to finish the night. Like, it does seem like we're getting more exciting baseball in Arlington, at least.
Yeah, and it's always a really fun tournament, it seems. So, like, I think that the fireworks are far from done. I think we're in for at least one more thriller that's based on nothing, based on except just a gut feel. But I think there's plenty of more excitement there, and obviously really everywhere else as the week goes on.
The vibes are certainly like that in the Big 12. The Pac-12 got play underway. There's almost nothing to play for in the Pac-12. Somebody asked me on Twitter and I did not respond because I was doing a million different things on Monday, like what there was to play for in the Pac-12. And I came very close to just responding nothing but the trophy, but I didn't do that. A more nuanced answer is that if Arizona went out and won the Pac-12 tournament, like maybe there's a path to hosting and Cal could try really hard and maybe find a way without winning the tournament to play their way in. Maybe everybody else, like Oregon's fine. Oregon State is fine as a host. Everybody else is in a, we have to win this tournament to go to the NCAA tournament mode, which is not the vibe you would want for the final Pac-12 tournament. Also only like the second Pac-12 tournament ever, third maybe, but it is what it is. The conference has been pretty stratified much of the year. And that just kind of seems to be where we've landed at season's end.
Yeah. It's such a weirdly low stakes tournament. I mean, like you said, there are three teams that are pretty safe in the tournament field. Two are locks. And then Oregon, barring something pretty unforeseen, is going to be in. And then for me, at least, Cal, I know they've been kind of my, I don't even know what to call them, I guess, like kind of darling, a team that I've been really fond of for like almost two seasons now. They need to, like, last night's Washington win really doesn't move the needle all that much. They need to go out and I think probably win at least two more to get in. That's my feeling on the Golden Bears.
Well, the thing is, because of pool play, they have to win their next game. Otherwise they're out. So they're in a must win in the next game. And then, yeah, probably must win in the semifinals. Maybe if they reach the finals, it's enough. I'd have to see where various RPI things landed. At that point, though, they would have won like 22 games against Pac-12 opponents. So like that'd be something at least.
Yeah, no, on the surface, it would look rather impressive. I just think the mission this week, as is the case with a lot of other teams, just go out and win as many games as you can. Like, don't leave as little doubt as you can. And their resume, when all is said and done, is probably still going to look rather murky. Somewhat of a notable result going on today. Stanford leads Oregon State 2-0 right now in the top of the sixth. That would be a really annoying, inconvenient loss for the Beavers. I don't know how secure you are in having them as a in their hosting spot right now. I know as of this morning, they were the 12th overall seed. Stanford right now, RPI wise, is 159th. So that would be a very odd loss for the Beavers. Stanford obviously needs to go out and win the Pac-12 to get into the NCAA tournament, but that's kind of the most notable result in Scott's.
So that would be very inconvenient if it comes to pass. Because it's just 2-0, I'm not going to spend a terrible amount of time on this, but quickly, in case it does happen and you're listening and are curious, the RPI looks like it would fall to Oregon State would fall to 17. Still good enough to host. I think that because they won the series in Tucson last weekend, that they should be considered the best team in the Pac-12. I would host that team, but this would be a very inconvenient loss. Notably, it also would advance Stanford to the semifinals. And man, wouldn't it just be like Stanford and like their worst season ever to find a way to get into the tournament and somehow like make it to Omaha for the fourth year in a row? Like,
I was going to say, I'm probably jumping the gun severely, but like when I first checked the score, like, I don't know, an hour or so ago, and then circled back right before we hopped on and had the Gamecast tab open, I'm jumping the gun severely here, but I'm like, man, Stanford's going to go out and win this Pac-12 tournament and go to Omaha, aren't they? They probably aren't. They still could lose today. But it would be a huge win for the Cardinal, to say the least.
No doubt about that. Let's go to Omaha, where the Big Ten tournament is being played underwater. Did you see any of the highlights yesterday, Peter?
No, I some of them, yes, but the okay, weather.
Well, so like, I don't remember who it was. I think it was somebody from Indiana hit a home run into right field. I think it landed kind of on top of the wall, but wherever it landed, it just shot up this huge like puddle because it had poured all day. I saw a picture from Omaha. I think Gary Sharp, one of the Omaha radio guys, took it. The dugout in Charles Schwab, there it is. It was totally flooded. I was like, this is intense, you guys.
Yeah, there's a ton of severe weather right now in the Midwest, and big shout out to the Charles Schwab grounds crew who always does an amazing job, whether it's at the College World Series or the Big Ten tournament, Creighton home games, whenever it is. They're excellent. But yeah, no, I remember what you're talking about. I think it was a Purdue home run against Indiana, and yeah, it was just like it landed in a pool.
It was nuts. Indiana won that game, and that's notable. I moved them into the field this morning. They're like literally the last team in, and the thing about being the last team in on Wednesday of this week is that you might as well be out because the bubble shrinks, and then if you don't continue winning, you get squeezed out. So Indiana, like, that was a nice win yesterday, good win, series win last weekend against Michigan, but like your job is not done by any means. Do not be deceived just because I put you in the field today. I also don't even feel amazing having done that. Like, it was kind of a gut feel thing, and they're in the field right now, but you know, they got to keep winning. The Big Ten is often ripe for a bid stealer. Like, I don't have it in front of me how often it's happened, but it certainly happens there. And because only Nebraska is truly locked in, like, I do think Illinois is fine even after losing to Penn State this morning. Not a whole lot happened negatively to their RPI with that loss. They are still 41, which means that I would pretty much just say Illinois might as well be a lock at this point. So if anyone but those two teams win, it kind of counts as a stolen bid, even if Indiana wins it. The point, though, is that if you're watching a bubble, the Big Ten is a tournament to watch. Nebraska and Illinois, the top two seeds, both have already taken L's. It's a true double elimination tournament. Like, so they're now trying to fight out of the loser's bracket immediately. Like, this is a bad scenario for folks on the bubble. I guess at this point you're rooting for Indiana because I already put them in the field, or for one of those two teams to come out of it. But that is, I would say Omaha and Clearwater, Florida, because Rice really played, or East Carolina really played around with Rice yesterday before beating them. But ECU, having won 5 straight American regular season titles, has only won 1 conference tournament in that time. They also this season took series losses to Tulane and UTSA, the seeds number 2 and 3 in that tournament. So that's a real potential stolen bid situation. So yeah, the AAC and the Big Ten are the two that I am watching the closest in terms of bid stealers.
Yeah, I'm with you. And with Illinois, I think that while they're still in, it would be in their best interest to not test out the going 0-2 in Omaha method and seeing if they still get an at-large bid. I think that would put them right on the bubble, perhaps on the wrong side of it. Indiana, we're still early on in the conference tournament week, but it couldn't have been a better, I think, 48 hours for them. They get a big win over Purdue. Illinois takes a tough loss. And like you said, though, while they're off to a good start, both on the field and in terms of looking at other results, like Cal, they just have to keep winning. They just have to keep racking up wins and not leave any doubt in Omaha. Because I think if they 2 more, I would say that they are almost definitely in. 1 more should be in. If they don't win another one, they might end up getting left out. So the bottom line is just keep taking wins and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, IU has some really goofy metrics. KPI rates them way better than RPI. Not like they have a terrible RPI. They also took a series loss early on to Illinois. I feel like Illinois has to get in before Indiana gets in, but you know, we'll wait and see on that. A lot to follow this week. In Omaha and beyond, as everything else gets underway today and tomorrow, pretty much. We also had the first 2 bids handed out. Army won the Patriot League and Penn won the Ivy League. Congrats
one
to
of us,
Peter.
One of us went 2 for 2 on those yes. predictions, I think.
Congrats to Peter for calling that. Bad job for me by saying, like, I really want to pick Penn and then picking Columbia, who went 0-2. So good job for Peter for correctly predicting the first 2. We'll hope that your prognostication success carries over into the NCAA tournament.
I have no promises there. And you also, to your credit, you did say you wanted to pick Penn, but I think we wanted to keep our predictions different. So it's like we kind of both went 2 for 2. So I'll give us the group 100%.
I will take the assist. That's as much credit as I'll take there. All right. So yeah, follow everything over at baseballamerica.com. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. This was a quick episode. We just wanted to get something in here before things really go crazy this week. We'll be back next week. There will be an NCAA tournament field by then. We will be talking about what to look forward to in regionals. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us, hit that like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is button. And, you know, we'll be back here at some point next week, probably again on Thursday, but we'll talk offline about that. But certainly look forward to that and everything else as we get ready to hit the road to Omaha next week, starting on Monday with the selection show. So for Peter, I'm Teddy. Enjoy a great week of baseball, and we'll talk to you next week.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.